It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum of Solace, number 113. Well, this week we have to begin with the Las Vegas shooting. And what can you say about it? It really is incomprehensible, as President Trump said, an act of pure evil, that somebody can take all those guns into a hotel room, all that ammunition, take all that time, and kill people just for the sake of it. We don't know the motivation. There's no evidence of him belonging to a political or religious group. So why? Why does someone do that? Now, there's a couple of issues here that I, without trivializing the subject, I want to take on board. Number one is just simply to ask, I've yet to hear any justification for having gun laws which permit a man to legally own so many semi-automatic weapons that are capable of killing so many people. And I'd love to hear this from some Christians, because I do hear Christians defending the right to bear arms, okay? Let's just accept that. Let's accept that people will even differ about that. But who needs the right to own that many guns and that much ammunition? Because apparently all that he had was legal. Now I hear people saying, well, if we've got guns, we can prevent this happening. But who prevented it happening? How do you prevent this happening? When a guy's up in a hotel, several 29 stories, I think it was up. It's a real problem. And here's another problem. Piers Morgan tweeted, if the shooter was Muslim, we'd call this a terrorist attack. This was a terrorist attack committed by a 64-year-old white American. Now, the fuss that followed from that because of the use of the word terrorism. What's going on here? What's going on is that Muslims are complaining that if the person is identified as a Muslim, then all Muslims are lumped in the same category. But let me assure my Muslim brothers and sisters that if this person had been a redneck, you know, Bible-quoting white southerner, all over the papers would have been, watch out for these religious people. I think the issue here is one of language, not so much one of prejudice, though I do accept that there can be prejudice. If someone was a Muslim and they killed lots of people, it could have been because they were mentally ill. It could have been because they had other grievances. There could be many, many different reasons. However, if someone shouts Allah Akbar and shows evidence of having belonged to ISIS or supporting ISIS, then that's a factor involved. There was a man, I mean, it's incredible that this is hardly noted at all, but two women were killed in Marseille this week by a man shouting Allah Akbar, who stabbed them to death. Did that have something to do with Islam or not? But let's return to this definition of terrorism. One man said to me that terrorism is anything that terrorizes. Another said it's any act of violence. Well, the language then becomes meaningless because it means that every crime is terrorism. It means that the teenagers who hang around in a gang at our street corner and scare old women, are they terrorists? You see what we're doing with the English language. Piers Morgan, also his tweet, what was wrong with his tweet was it was profoundly racist. Is he saying that only coloured people are Muslims? Is he saying that Americans can't be Muslims? Sometimes commentators like Piers Morgan really frustrate because they speak with such authority and yet with such ignorance. Now, speaking of terror, what about the... This is an incredible story. The man who sat on the London Tube, who started reading out the Bible and read out verses about death not being the end and read out verses about homosexuality, and passengers panicked.
back behind me in the middle of the carriage, obviously some people got a little bit scared about this and started to sort of push away and push down the carriage and cause a bit of a crush and a stampede up the middle of the train. You know, a black guy standing with a backpack reciting things about the afterlife and we're all going to die probably did scare off quite a few people.
Now, some Christians respond to this by saying, doesn't this just show the ignorance of our society or the lack of freedom of speech if someone wants to read out loud from the Bible as an act of witness on a tube? Isn't that a good thing? Well, I'm not so sure. I think we should be a little bit more careful with this. Why would you read out the Bible out loud on a packed tube in today's environment where people have no clue what you're doing? And why would you read about, I mean, are you preaching to people? They're on their journey. What are you doing? To me, it's incredibly unwise in a biblically illiterate society to do something as daft as that. One time I was down at the Caird Hall here in Dundee, and outside this, in this big public area, there was a big American evangelist shouting verses from the King James Version. Now, no one was listening. People were walking past. Occasionally, youngsters would laugh. But they weren't listening. So I went to speak to him, but he wouldn't talk to me. So I spoke to his friend who was there. And I said, what are you doing? I said, do you know this? I admire the courage of standing up in public and proclaiming the word of God. But you do realize that people are not listening. And they're just laughing at you, if at all. And he said, oh, no, we're telling the word of God. Oh, it's great. Oh, it's wonderful. I said, yeah, okay. It is the word of God. But I tell you what, let me offer you a wee challenge. Why don't you strip naked and run around shouting out John 3:16? Oh, he said, that's ridiculous. My point exactly. Speaking of the ridiculous, let's return to the subject of the year, which is going to continue, and that's transgender. Now, I'm not doing this because of an obsession with it. I'm doing it because every single week, without fail, there is yet another story, yet more propaganda coming up. And this week's one is really quite astounding.
That actually happens in clinical practice with transgender children who are not happy and really often disquieted by their physical development and changes. And during the process of psychological assessment as to whether they want to remain in their chosen gender long term, then at that stage, puberty can be blocked using gonadotropin releasing hormone analogues. And the clinic that we run,
Britain's NHS is struggling for cash. I know, I have personal experience of it. And yet it managed to find the money to do this. Dozens of transgender teenagers are freezing their sperm or preserving their eggs so that they can have babies after changing sex. Boys, some as young as 12, who believe they are female are having their sperm frozen before receiving their powerful hormone treatment. Girls are having their eggs frozen before they take male hormones that reduce their fertility. So, okay, you are really hearing this. Girls who want to be men are having their eggs frozen so that as men, later on, they can have babies. So girls who want to be men also want to be mothers. Now, our NHS is funding this. Egg freezing costs £4,000 for one cycle and around £300 for storage for 1 year. We find the money to do this. When we're cutting back on cancer treatments, when we can't employ enough nurses, when I was on a ward that has 30 beds that never has more than 24 of them occupied because they can never get enough nurses because of financial cutbacks. I'm sorry, why are we doing this insanity? Something which itself is so harmful anyway. It's because of political pressure and political correctness, and it's about time that someone had the courage and the guts to stop it. Walking out on the Revelation Trail, going nowhere slowly. In the face of a terminal wind, I look over my shoulder to glory. For all around me is hostage. I love a band called Runrig. They've been around for years because, for a start, I used to go and hear them at Edinburgh University at Teviot Row. Great concerts. Scottish, Celtic, Gaelic, rock. Wonderful. I even had the privilege once of interviewing Callum MacDonald, their main songwriter, as on Mary Firth Radio. I love singing their songs, but I won't inflict that on you. So when I heard that they were finally retiring and announcing their final concert in August next year in Stirling, I was interested. 25,000 tickets went on sale at 10 o'clock in the morning and were sold out within minutes. Except, of course, they weren't sold out within minutes, because 25,000 tickets did not go on sale. Many of those tickets were actually passed on to a subsidiary of the ticket seller, who then, instead of charging £49, charged between £246 and £275. Yep, you're right, it's a scam, and it's one that goes on regularly in the music industry. Now, thankfully, Runrig have put up another concert, and hopefully we won't be subject to the same scam. But there is something else here. I see Christian organizations using the same method, using the same clickbait stuff, using the same, we'll sell you this at this rate when it's a limited number, and then putting the prices up. I guess we have to use advertising, but using the methodology and techniques of the world in order to sell the products that we have that are associated with the communication of the gospel. Is there not something just wrong with that? Finally, a wee piece of good news. I saw this amazing video, and we put a link to it on my blog. And by the way, the light engaging darkness section of my blog usually contains the stories that are in here and more detailed and links and so on. We try and tie the two things together. Well, there you'll find this amazing video from the BBC about a wall being built in Africa. No, this is not a wall across the Mexican border to try and prevent people from coming in. But it is a wall, yes, to prevent something. It's to prevent the encroachment of the Sahara and the sand and the desert further south into fertile land. It is a wall of trees and greenery. And 11 different countries, using modern technology, getting people to cooperate together, are seeking to build this. It's not always working, but where it does work, what's happening is it's creating jobs, it's providing food. It's a wonderful example of the Christian mandate, of the mandate rather that we've been given by God to go out and to subdue the earth, not to destroy it, but in this fallen world, to do what we can to preserve and to protect and to provide. I think it's a great story. See you next week. Meanwhile, please keep telling us the stories that you're interested in, and God bless you.